Item number five, when we do have Mr. Wolf here today, would you like to give us some good words, Mr. Wolf?
I hope they'll be good words. As usual, I'm happy to be here and to tell you a few of the things that are going on in Sacramento with the State Board. And I've selected some things that I thought would be of interest to you, but I'm happy to answer questions or talk about anything as you like. The first item I thought would be of interest was on June 17th, we approved a TMDL from the Los Angeles region for metals in the Los Angeles River. And we were requested by some of the cities in that area to remand the TMDL on the grounds that atmospheric deposition is a significant cause of metals in their stormwater systems. And they felt that the TMDL didn't put enough pressure on the South Coast Air Quality Management District to try to control atmospheric deposition of metals. And they, as cities, were having to bear the brunt of that and clean up the problem after the fact, you know, end of pipe treatment rather than prevention. And we did not remand the TMDL, but we did direct them in the adopting resolution with their consent to pressure the South Coast Air Quality Management District to cooperate more collaboratively, more effectively in addressing these issues, and to remind them of sections 13247 and 13146 of the Water Code. And these may be of interest to you. They were cited in a TMDL in the Bay Area, pesticide-related toxicity, a number of years ago, and now have been brought up again in the context of the LA River Metals TMDL. And these sections say basically that other state agencies have to do what a basin plan says they have to do, or what a statewide policy says they have to do. So the Water Board system has these nuclear weapons hidden away in the Water Code that we rarely use. It's worth being aware of their existence and at least letting other state agencies know they exist and that we would really like them to work with us when there's sound science and a need for, you know, cross-agency coordination to solve a problem in the most effective way. And hopefully we don't ever need to order another state agency to do anything. But letting people know that those sections of the code exist and encouraging them to really help us to solve those problems is important. So we did that on that particular TMDL. And I expect the South Coast Air Quality Management District will not be happy to hear they can be ordered, but I do think that the approach that we advocated, which was to talk with them and to encourage them to work with us to solve the problem as a first step, with the understanding that there is some authority to do something more if necessary, I think that's a good approach. And the full board agreed, and the LA board staff agreed, and the cities down in the LA area were quite happy about it because they feel, as I say, as if they're trying to solve a problem that's not entirely within their control. Second thing of interest is that we have a statewide mandatory minimum penalty reduction initiative going on, and Roger will be talking more about that, I think. He indicated just before the meeting he'd be speaking with you more about that, or maybe he's spoken to you some already in the past. But it's well underway, and by year-end we expect the backlog of MMPs to have been brought down to close to zero. And I think this is a win-win for the system. It's going to be a big success for the system. You know, the water boards were criticized some numbers of years ago for not exercising our enforcement discretion very effectively, and the legislature passed the mandatory minimum penalty law. But then a large mandatory minimum penalty backlog has developed because of staffing issues and priority issues and so forth. So then we've been criticized again for not following the law. So the initiative will bring that backlog down, and it will not only, you know, fulfill the law and look good to environmental groups and average citizens that we're following the law, but I think for many of the regulated entities it will be helpful as well. We had a very interesting comment from the League of Rural Counties during our strategic planning process, where they commented that they supported hearing early about any MMPs that they were subject to as early as possible, because many of the smaller communities don't even necessarily know when they submit a quarterly report that they exceeded a threshold to be subject to an MMP. It's not automatically calculated, and if they don't have a lot of legal staff or staff trained in that, they may not know. And so they may be accumulating MMPs, accumulating a higher liability when there was something they could have done to not accumulate them, but they didn't know they needed to do that. So being informed quickly by their regional board, oh, you're in violation, oh, you're subject to MMPs, can actually help them to reduce their liability. So I think the initiative will be a big success statewide. And the Central Valley region, which is probably furthest along with it, I got some statistics from them last week. They've sent out penalty notices for over 3,100 violations to date, totaling about $6.9 million in penalties. They say they're about halfway through their backlog. They found about 1,500 violations that hadn't even been entered into the CWIC system and that they'll be entering. And so I think this, you know, this effort is going to be very visible and very positive for the waterborne system. Third, we're holding workshops on AB 2121. This is the North Coast in-stream flow standards. We'll be holding those workshops on August 5 and 6, one in Ukiah and another in Santa Rosa. The policy's been very, very controversial. One of the really, real bright spots related to the policy, not strictly in the policy, but related to the policy, is that Trout Unlimited has obtained a large grant to do five or so pilot projects in the North Coast where working with water rights holders, they're going to put real-time monitoring equipment in place to monitor the actual flows in the streams at certain places and the diversions from the streams at certain places. And by having real-time monitoring, assuming the system works well and the, you know, the equipment functions well under field conditions and is affordable and so forth, you can have a much more effective water rights system, effective environmentally and effective economically, because you can actually know that the water in the stream that you calculated when you issued the water rights is in the stream, and you can actually know when people aren't utilizing their full water right, which then means someone else could utilize it. And if there's enough water in the stream and there's water available because someone else isn't using their full right, you'd think someone else, you know, could use it. But under our current system, they can't, because we sum up the total, the maximum of the rights and the requirement for the stream. And if that total is equal to the total of water, then no one else can have any water, even though there might be some of actually physically available. So this real-time monitoring opens up all kinds of doors to a more effective system environmentally and economically, and it's very interesting. And the AB 2121 policy allows this type of thing to be implemented through a group approach, a watershed approach, which doesn't get a lot of page space in the policy, but it is there as a door, an open door, and this project, I think, is gonna drive through that door in a very big and very positive way. We have our Delta Work Plan, Part 2, up for public discussion next Wednesday. Part 1 was adopted in December. Part 2, I hope, will be adopted next week. It also is highly controversial, and in fact, I'll be leaving this meeting early today so that I can get home and read all of the correspondence which just came in at close of business on Wednesday. We held Cal American hearings on the water rights enforcement order. Please do not ask me any questions or make any comments about that item because I'm under the ex parte rule, but I am permitted to speak about non-controversial process aspects. And the non-controversial process that's going on is that we've held 2 days of hearings on the liability issue. We have 3 more days of hearings on the possible remedies, assuming liability exists. Those three days will occur the week after next, and we reserved 2 more days for remedy discussions if necessary in the second week of August. So by the middle of August, we'll be done with the hearings, and it's unclear when an order would actually be available. Often it takes as much as 4 to 6 months for an order to be prepared after the close of the hearings. Finally, I wanted to comment that I personally had some vacation time, went to Spain, and on that vacation I went to the Expo Zaragoza 2008, which is sort of a world's fair of water. I was really quite surprised by this thing. They've taken 50 acres along the Ebro River in Zaragoza, Spain, and they've built a complex that was very impressive and that housed 140 exhibitions from different countries around the world on the water issues they're facing. And they're having 30 to 40,000 people a day show up to the expo, and it runs for 93 days. So it's many millions of average citizens who are spending vacation time to go learn about water and have water-related experiences, including Cirque du Soleil trooping through the streets from 12 to 1 every day doing, you know, acrobatics and stuff around water issues. And at 10:30 at night, there's this thing they call the Spectacular on the Ebro River, where this thing that looks like an iceberg that's been built in the river breaks apart into 4 pieces, and penguins go flying off the top into the river, and then a multimedia presentation occurs. And there's a sound stage, and there were these little operas being done about water, and in German, being sung in German, and there was a children's puppet stage and whatnot. So it was very impressive, actually, that the public is thinking about water in this way, and it was just a reminder to me of how the water crisis really is a worldwide crisis, of how important our work is, of how pleased I am with your strategic approach here in this region with groundwater, surface water, and sustainable land use as your high-level objectives. And the importance of looking at the big picture and working on that big picture. And just as a closing note, I did read the resume associated with the person who will be hired, I believe, for the Low Impact Development Center here fairly soon. In item 19 of your packet, I read that last night, and she's clearly very highly qualified. I'm very excited to see your Low Impact Development Institute get off the ground with such a high caliber person leading it. So with that, I'd be happy to talk about anything or let you get on with the rest of your business.
Any questions for Mr. Wolf? Comments? It's always a pleasure to have you here, sir. Monica?
Blow on the draw here.
That's all right.
Sorry about that.
This is all new to us.
I just wanted to get a little more information on the workshop in Santa Rosa. This is a state board conducted workshop, so the information is very likely to be found on the state board website.
Indeed it is.
Excellent.
Under AB 2121. And there's a workshop, I believe it's from 1 to 5 on August 6th in Santa Rosa.
Okay.
And on August 5th, we have the same workshop essentially from 1 to 5, but it's being held in Ukiah. Because for people in the far north of the North Coast region, Santa Rosa is a little far south. So we've got two venues.
Excellent. Thank you.
Mr. Briggs?
Gary, you mentioned the Mandatory Minimum Penalty Initiative, and I was going to mention that in my executive officer's report, but since you brought it up, I'll just finish off your comments there from the local perspective. I have brought this to the attention of the board previously, but just to remind you, we did take up the Office of Enforcement's offer for assistance. All the regions have committed to eliminating the backlog through various degrees of assistance, are using various degrees of assistance from the Office of Enforcement. And in our case, we had some process going as far as addressing our highest priority or our highest number of mandatory minimum penalty violations. The largest such violator happens to be the California Men's Colony in San Luis Obispo County, and that's still scheduled for September, Harvey? That'll be before you at our next board meeting. And then we had the next two in terms of number of violations. I believe they are both hot springs discharges that have salt problems. Those are the next two, Harvey? Is that right? Okay. And while those are indeed violations and we have met with the owners and they need to be rectified, they are not the highest priority violations in the world or in our region. And then we have asked Reed Sato and his troop there to proceed with the statewide process, include us in the statewide process for the remainder of those mandatory minimum penalties. And in a nutshell, what it means is they send out a mass mailing which is customized for the individual discharge and says, here's what we have in terms of your liability. If that's correct, you have an opportunity to just go ahead and pay up, basically administratively. And if not, then we can proceed with the regular hearing and that sort of thing. But it's a opportunity to sort of clear the books,
right,
and move on.
Yeah, I should comment that, with respect to MMPs, I expect we'll probably see some legislative proposals next year to change the MMP laws. Partially in response to our cleaning up the backlog, because some of the violations are de minimis. Some of them are, failure to report this or that, and things that are or conditions beyond the control, because the original law had very narrow conditions beyond the control, and there are some that are, outside that the law doesn't allow someone to get out of, but yet reasonably one might want to. So I do expect we're going to have some pressure on the legislature to amend the law somewhat as a result of cleaning up the backlog, but that's appropriate. I mean, they passed the law. We should implement the law. And then if the law is, inappropriate in certain ways, they should then fix the law. And we did include in the Water Quality Initiative, the legislative response to Senator Parada's structural reform bill, We did include in the administration's legislative counterproposal, if you will, or cooperative proposal on restructuring, that if someone were to pay their minimum mandatory penalty at the time that they report it, when they submit the report which shows a violation to have occurred, if they pay it at that time, they get a discount. So we did actually propose a change in the MMP law, which might or might be adopted this session, to expedite this issue of, you know, if people know that they're subject to the violation and they want to just pay it and be done with it and not put us through a lot of process, that does save time, that does save money, and they're deserving of a discount for that.
Just one other point for the board's perspective. I mentioned at the last meeting that we had, which was actually our June meeting, that I thought we actually did a pretty good job with our responsibilities as far as permitting and enforcement and that sort of thing. So you might say, gee, why are we worried about this backlog? And in our case, if we proceed with, as we were, with the those top three, just the top violator, California Men's Colony, and we have that scheduled for September, the remaining backlog that we have is less than 1% of the state's total. So we're not a big player in terms of the backlog problem.
Before you leave, can you address the SIP issue? And I'm sure you're aware how this board feels about SIP programs.
Sure. Mr. Press, Dr. Press, asked me that just before the meeting started, which is fine. But I have no further information since we spoke last. I have not seen a revised draft from the staff or been briefed on it, or I'm not aware of anything. I will support this board's position that we should leave the system alone essentially as it is, that the system's not broken, why fix it? On the other hand, as I said, I think at a previous meeting, I don't find it to be the most compelling issue in our enforcement policy. You know, our enforcement policy, the last draft, was missing things like how to track down non-filers and penalize them. I mean, non-filers, complete scofflaws who are subject to the law but are outside of it, but think they're outside the system. That's a serious problem, and we need to really be focused on that. And maybe that's my strongest argument for leaving the SEP thing alone, is that we ought to be paying attention to what's most important. I don't intend to get in a big fight about SEPs, but I do hope that you'll continue to put your position forward, and I hope there'll be enough votes to just leave it alone as it is, because, as I say, I don't think it's broken.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Wolf? Thank you very much for being here today, and have a safe trip home.
Thank you.